And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. So glad you could join us with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. If you can't get to a phone, we certainly direct you towards social media. And we want to remind you, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Rick Saratello from NFL Draft Bible will be joining us momentarily as he will provide his perspective on the Giants draft class. But in the meantime, let's get Paul Dottino's perspective on the NFL draft class as we finally have some prospects that the Giants are going to bring home.
You know, for the first time in about 4 or 5 months, we no longer have to speculate.
Correct. Yes, which is a nice thing. No more mock drafts. No more what they should do in this spot. We actually have roster spots.
You know, and I think the one thing that if you're a Giants fan that you want to feel good about is that all six of the Giants picks have make it grades on them. They did not reach for anybody, even in the later rounds, that are going to should have a hard time making the roster. These guys are all make it grade players. I think that's important because if you only have six picks, it's not like even you have that seventh pick where, you know, maybe sometimes you're making a throwaway, just taking a shot. It didn't happen here. Giants went with all guys who have legitimate opportunities at the 53. That, I think, is the first thing you want to say. Second thing you want to say, the Giants went after guys that have good files. These have guys have good character. These guys have had minimal football bumps and bruises. To my knowledge, no surgeries in the bunch.
Correct.
And so when you consider what John Mara said a couple of months ago, where the Giants had to be more productive in the draft, and that over the last 5 or 6 years, they may have taken too many risks, and they wanted to be more sure about players that they took. He clearly, and the Giants clearly, went in that direction and made sure that they were taking guys who maybe didn't have the highest of upsides, but were quality players with strong upsides, but had high-level floors. You know, guys who are not going to, at least based on projections, flame out and have warning signs that could plummet them off the board. So that's my initial impression. Without getting into specifics about the players, that's what I'm thinking about when I look at this class.
Well, we'll get into specifics a little bit later on, but at least what I took away, big picture perspective, I would agree with you, the fact that four of the six players got their degrees and graduated. I mean, I think that's something that shouldn't be overlooked because that talks about character, leadership. Secondly, I think what that also shows, Paul.
Medical, too, it shows.
Medical, too. Durability, that's a key, but it also shows the fact that there's a resume there to judge them on the football field other than saying, hey, this guy just emerged out of nowhere during his sophomore campaign or during his junior year. You have a good 3 years. You know, some of them did take a redshirt year, but you have at least 3 years of something to say, hey, this is what they've been able to do. This is how they were utilized in the scheme and so forth. The other takeaway that I noticed was three positions in particular that the Giants, you can make the argument, Paul, they had some depth. They had some options on the roster, but they decided, you know what, it's good value to take that position where we're drafting, so we're going to bring in some more competition. Running back, tight end, and safety are the three positions that come into mind. You can argue they have options already on the roster, but they said to themselves, there's great value here in like a guy like Paul Perkins. We're going to throw him in the mix and
sure.
Let the best player emerge to the top.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point because everybody always wants to push the need component higher on the chart. And in reality, the Giants, especially on the second and third days, really, really paid attention to their value chart more than anything else. I would also add one other thing, Lance. You know, a lot of folks have debated all weekend about the Tunsil thing. Let's just reiterate one thing that Jerry Reese said. I believe Coach McAdoo also said it the other night after the pick was made. Apple was the highest-rated clean player on the board. That's all you need to know. And before we get a bunch of calls who want to argue and debate should the Giants have taken Tunsil or not, I'm going to make it very clean for you, okay, if I can steal a phrase. If Tunsil was off the Giants board because of his issues, and you could surmise from their conversations that that was the case, if you don't like Apple, who else would you have taken at 10, given the guys that were still left on the board and given the fact that you were going to make the pick and you weren't going to trade out? If you have issues about Tunsil or you have issues about Apple, then tell me who else you would have taken there. I'm going to tell you something. I don't think that there's anybody else there that I would have taken. I think given the sets of circumstances that fell to them at 10, I understand the Apple pick. I understand it now better than I did before because, of course, I don't know all the stuff about Tunsil that the NFL people know. I mean, heck, I was even asked on the MSG show by Papa, and so was Banks. Banks and I both said, we'll take Tunsil. But we don't know enough about him. The Giants must know a lot more than we do.
And a lot of things did come to the forefront right before the draft even started, which was last second for a lot of teams to shuffle through. For those of you watching on Twitter, certainly appreciate that. Tune over and head over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We are recapping the Giants draft pick, six players coming into the mix. Later this week, they'll have rookie mini camp, so we will certainly get into more on
Friday.
Correct. That will kick off on Friday. And Ben McAdoo did talk about what at least the goals were for rookie minicamp. It's not so much to bring them in and, you know, work them through every single drill. It's to view it as more of an orientation type of setting, Paul.
Yes. And the key is for these guys to at least get a flavor or a taste of what it is to be a Giant because they're not even allowed to take the playbooks home. And, you know, they got to stay here. That's just the way it works in this league. So they're here for a few days. They get a chance to soak some of it in. They understand, you know, what it is the Giants want from them. They meet the strength and conditioning coach, the nutritionist, and they get a feel for what the program's going to be about. And, of course, the other thing is I believe that you're allowed to have some of your rehabbing veterans around. They can't interact with them on the field, but they can be around
in the
facility.
Building.
Guys
yes.
who are rehabbing. So it's a chance to meet some of the veterans who they're going to be looking up to once they get here.
Yeah, Ben McAdoo said there may be a brief interaction, but there's not going to be a whole team meeting
well,
where you
be.
Have the veterans, correct. And if anything, there may be a slight overlap late Thursday if some of the young guys are coming in. But other than that, they don't anticipate any of the meshing until the following week when then the rookies start to obviously mix and mingle with the actual team when they can get back to full workouts. But it's an opportunity for also the Giants to take a look at some undrafted players who have some interest. Remember, Giants have had a good track record with giving guys who haven't been drafted some opportunities. Kerry Wynn, he's on the roster. Victor Cruz. There's a number of players that
Richie
have certainly taken advantage. Yes,
you
part
know?
Of the offensive line.
And I will add this before we get to our guest because he's on the line right now. I will add this. I saw a number the other day, I guess in recent years in the NFL, the incoming rookies have been told that only half of the rookies who make the NFL this year are going to actually see a part of their fourth year in the pros. That's how fleeting a career can be. And there will probably be, according to recent track record, between 40 and 50 undrafted rookie free agents that make rosters this season. Opportunity.
Well, for the sake of the salary cap, you need to find guys that are not that expensive, and the Giants certainly have done that. They expect to bring in, according to what Mark Ross said, about 12 to 15 players, which is a little bit more than what they usually bring in each and every year. All right, well, it's time to review the entire draft class, and then we'll get to your full phone calls and tweets a little bit later on here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, but kind enough to give us a few minutes from NFL Draft Bible is Rick Saratella. Rick, Lance Meadow, Paul Dottino here with you on Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Hey, thanks for being here, guys. And 39 players drafted that were not invited to the NFL Scouting Combine as well. Another number for you.
Very interesting.
Well, you know, Rick, it's funny because some of those guys, and we've heard of some of them, especially Teron Beckham, I guess, who got a tryout invitation with the Jets this week, like to stress their pro day numbers and their workouts because, obviously, as you say, they didn't go to the combine. But, Rick, let me ask you this because I've heard people talk to me about this, that those pro day numbers are a little gray. They're a little sketchy. They're not quite, let's say, as exact or as closely monitored as the combine numbers. And so people should take some of those things with a grain of salt. At least that's what I've been told.
Yeah, you know, you hear a lot like about the laser times versus handheld times. You know, scouts tend to add a 0.04, whatever their handheld time is. But the way I view it is, by the time you get to the pro day circuit, you've already had the NFL scouting combine. So the pro day is really for more for guys that weren't in Indianapolis and you kind of get to check the boxes with those guys. So it's more of a barometer than it is, you know, a judge of a talent. So if you see a guy, you know, Darian Thompson, for example, he ran a 4.8 something at the combine.
Yeah.
Then maybe you want to check him out at the pro day. Does he improve? Is he really that slow? You go back and double check the film. So I think it's really a barometer to kind of check off the boxes on guys that weren't in Indianapolis and maybe some guys that are kind of off the radar. You know, it's so hard to try to evaluate everybody. There's always guys that, you know, right, you know, get on the NFL radar because of a Teron Beckham who could jump and run incredible type of numbers.
Well, we want to get into some details on the Giants draft picks, Rick, but before we get into specifics, your thoughts on how the Giants did in terms of the entire class that they selected?
I think it was a very solid draft. It was interesting that they didn't beef up the offense or defensive line. I know they were in the market for a Leonard Floyd player, but they got outmaneuvered, quite frankly, by the Titans and the Bears. Jerry Reese asleep at the wheel at number 10. He leaves himself open to a little bit of criticism here with the selection of Eli Apple over Vernon Hargraves III. I think that, you know, Hargraves kind of makes a little bit more sense when you think about Apple is now projected to play that, you know, slot nickel corner type of role. And he's 6'1", but I get what they're doing. The NFL is trending towards a more, you know, taller, faster type of defensive back. So in a year or two, he takes over for Dominique Rogers-Cromartie. I love the Sterling Shepard selection. I think he's an explosive playmaker now that you compare with an Odell Beckham. You lose Reuben Randall in free agency. You know, whatever you get out of Victor Cruz is a bonus, in my opinion. So here's a kid with polished route running, excellent hands, can create separation. I think he's going to have the biggest impact of this Giants draft class. And then the third round, we mentioned Thompson. You could kind of pair him with the Landon Collins, move him around. He has experience playing strong, free, and linebacker, so don't be surprised if he plays a little bit of a joker role there. And B.J. Goodson, bring a guy like that in for young competition in the middle. So the Giants signed a lot of veteran guys there at that middle linebacker position. He's a guy that could play two downs and maybe compete for a starting job.
You know, it's funny, Rick. When I looked at your pre-draft ratings as we were preparing for the show, I noticed that every single one of the guys the Giants picked were top six on your board at their specific positions. And so I knew you were going to be fairly high on them when you gave their overall grade out. The back end of the draft, which not a lot of people have heard about or talked about because, let's face it, it happened later Saturday and there has not been much analysis. Could you talk a little bit about Perkins in particular, who comes into the Giants with a position that is chock full of good, solid NFL players? It's going to be hard for him to make this team.
That's true, but I do like the value with this kid because on my board, as you mentioned, I had him relatively high, and I think he has excellent vision and patience. Something that running backs lack coming out of the collegiate game nowadays is that patience. And I don't want to say he's Marshawn Lynch. He has similar characteristics, but the way he explodes through the hole, you're going to see a guy that maybe isn't that big, but he's a between-the-tackles guy. I like what he brings from a dynamic type of standpoint. You pair him with a guy like Shane Vereen, two playmakers out of the backfield, and, you know, he's a liability right now in pass protection, so that's going to be something he needs to develop at the next level, but I thought it was a good value pick. And then Jarrell Adams, you know, here's a guy, a lot of people had him as a late day two, maybe early day three selection. And, you know, a little bit raw, but a pass-catching tight end ability. I think, you know, the reason why he slid, you hear he had a hard time picking up the playbook at South Carolina. So, you know, he went in that sixth, seventh round range. But really, I mean, another pass-catching tight end that you can add to the mix with a Will tie. You don't really know what Larry Donnell is going to do coming back off of an injury. And they want to create that competition. You know, you see it at the tight end position.
Well, Rick, I would agree with you. I think competition, bringing in competition, a big theme for the Giants draft to try to spice things up at positions where maybe they already had options on the roster. Now, you mentioned Adams, the tight end they brought in. And when you look at the makeup of the tight ends currently on the roster, I think they have guys that could certainly run routes and catch the football, but maybe there's room to bring in a blocker. When you look at Adams amongst this tight end class in this year's group, how is he from a blocking perspective, and how much of a strength is that, perhaps, what he brings to the table?
I believe Jarrell Adams is very adequate. You know, he brings it. He's a guy that gives a lot of effort. Now, he might not be the best blocker, but he's not a bad blocker either. And, you know, they still have guys like Justice Cunningham, I believe, and Matt Lacoste is a guy to really watch because, you know, I really thought he was going to be destined to do some pretty good things in the Ben McAdoo offense, and he was a season type of injury, but I would keep an eye on that guy in training camp. Matt Lacoste, I think he has an opportunity to really do something. So, you know, at the same time, I don't think Jarrell Adams' roster spot is guaranteed by any means, and, you know, again, I think it just comes about that competition.
Let me ask you about Goodson for a second, Rick. You talked a little bit glowingly about him a few minutes ago. But, you know, the Giants brought back Jesper Brinkley. They signed Robinson from the Redskins, so they've invested some money. Stuckley from the Dolphins came
Shepherd.
In. Shepherd. I'm Kelvin sorry, Shepherd. Yeah. Shepherd came in from the Dolphins. So they've invested some money in bringing in young veteran guys who have some NFL experience, and now all of a sudden they draft a guy from Clemson on the third day. So how do you think he competes against those folks? Now, again, I know he's got to make it great, but it does seem as though that room's going to be a little crowded.
Right, and I felt like, honestly, I thought B.J. Goodson was a bigger reach than Eli Apple, in my opinion, just because I thought there was a lot of evenly matched middle linebackers that you could have had later in the round or even undrafted. A guy like Tyler Matakavich comes to mind. But, you know,
it's going to be
So, I mean, you know, he has the size, prototypical size. He's about 6'1", 240. You know, the deal is with him, he's a one-year wonder. You know, he just came onto the scene, bursted out of nowhere last season, led the team with 118 tackles, had about, you know, a bunch of tackles behind the line of scrimmage, and even a handful of sacks. So, you know, doesn't have the body of work as some of these other guys. I think, you know, he struggles a little bit in that pass coverage. I'm not sure he's a guy that you're going to be, you know, sticking in there to cover a tight end or a running back out of the backfield. He's not that type of player yet. So he is a developmental guy, and I think that they're, you know, bringing him in there as somebody that they could potentially groom to become a starter down the road, and, you know, that's what you look for in these mid-round selections.
Talking with Rick Saratella from NFL Draft Bible. Rick, you mentioned that, you know, he may not be a three-down linebacker as of right now, and I think part of what you alluded to as to why he didn't get much playing time is Clemson had a lot of depth. I mean, that was arguably one of the best defenses over the last few years, so he was playing behind a lot of talent. They graduated. Obviously, he got his opportunity. He started on the middle, then they moved him to the outside, then he returned back to the middle, and, you know, when you think of a middle linebacker, setting the stage for the defense, communication is key. What jumps out to you about maybe what he brings to the table there, at least on a first and down and second down basis, to really perhaps set the tone and see the field well?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think he's going to be a developmental guy that still needs to come in and be in that situation a little bit more, get some experience under his belt. You know, he had some good measurables, too, and I think that's what was appealing. If you take a look at some of these draft picks, a lot of these guys had good measurables. Of course, Thompson was the one guy that did not, but they got, you know, great value there. So, you know, I think it's going to be a learning process, and we don't know what they saw. You know, if they met with him behind closed doors, a lot of times the interview process has a lot to do with
that.
I thought the one interesting tidbit from the Giants draft process, just texting with Eli Apple's father, Timothy, after he was selected, he said, "This is incredible. We never saw it coming." They had no contact with them throughout the entire draft process, not at the combine, not at the pro day. So I thought that was an interesting tidbit as well.
Hey, Rick, let me ask you this. Everyone is concentrating on the Giants picks here, and I get that. But what about the rest of the division? Because, after all, those are the teams you have to fight to get into the playoffs. I understand wild cards and stuff, but you want to win your division, and that's how you're going to make it into the postseason. What were your thoughts specifically about the Cowboys, who, hey, no one's going to argue that Ezekiel Elliott is an absolute terrific player. I get that. And I understand they're going to go more to the ground and pound like what they had when DeMarco Murray was there a couple years ago. That's fine. But the second pick, Jalen Smith, a guy who's going to have to redshirt this year, that seemed to me like they went way high for him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, again, they leave the door open for criticism with the selection of a running back, number four overall. Yes, he's head and shoulders above of the rest of the draft class. Yes, he's a three-down back. He can do it all. But me personally, I don't draft a running back in the first round. I really don't even think about running backs till day three, even if I think about drafting a running back, because I see these undrafted guys come out of the woodworks year in and year out. I think you can find a guy to always fit your system. But now they come back second round, Jalen Smith, a roll of the dice. But, you know, their team doctor is also the one that performed surgery on Jalen Smith. So, you know, they have to have some kind of inside edge and must feel comfortable enough with their doctors. Now, on the flip side of that, you know, I think the doctor probably feels like he did a good job. What's he going to say? You know, nah, I boxed it up.
Right. So, he's not going to tell the Cowboys who also employ him that, oh, this guy's knee's not so good, because now what does that say about him as a doctor?
Right. Well, you know, and I guess we'll see what happens, because I know just talking to a couple of other teams, you know, they were pretty much split 50-50 down the middle as to whether or not this kid would ever suit up again.
Yeah, that's a scary number.
Absolutely. And then there's a whole debate about Miles Jack, too. And plus, Dallas, you can make the argument, as I'm sure you know, Rick, could use some pass rushers. And I know they took a defensive end and a defensive tackle later on. But that's why I think a lot of people were surprised, yeah, because they were so down low in sacks overall. In terms of getting back to the Giants, Rick, when you look at this class, I mean, I know you said there's some great value here that the Giants got. Who do you think could come in year one and have the biggest impact on this team?
I think it's Sterling Shepard, without a doubt. And, you know, you hate to compare him to a guy like Victor Cruz. Of course, Victor Cruz was coming out of UMass, big difference between Oklahoma, but a lot of similar characteristics, a guy you can line up inside or outside. Again, polished route running, can create separation. And if you look at his body of work, all he's done is produce and be a team leader. So, you know, I think the opportunity is there for him to capitalize on it. Me, personally, I'm still not a big believer in Victor Cruz. When I see it, I'll believe it. So I think that, you know, Sterling Shepard steps in day one as that wide receiver number two.
Good stuff, Rick. I appreciate
it. Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate the insight, Rick. Thanks so much for hopping on here for a few minutes.
Rick Sotelo, NFL Draft Thanks Bible. You can always find him on Twitter and online. Thank you, Rick.
All right, so Rick weighing in on all of the Giants draft selections. Also talked a little bit about the NFC East. The Redskins also took a wide receiver high in Josh Doctson out of TCU.
That's a really good pick for them, because if you believe that Kirk Cousins is more than a one-year wonder, they now suddenly have quite an offensive attack between Doctson. They pair him with DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, and it's like all of a sudden now they can throw the ball. Don't forget Jordan Reed, who really emerged last year when he finally stayed healthy for a change as one of the more potent tight ends in the league.
Well, and I'm glad you noted the Redskins roster, because, see, that gets back to when you look at the Giants' first-round pick and – putting the player aside, the importance of three corners on the field.
Oh, man.
And when you look at the makeup of this division, Paul, as you just laid out, what the Redskins have to offer with three wide receivers plus their tight end. Let's not forget about their young running back, who also can catch the ball out of the backfield. And then the Cowboys with Romo healthy, Dez Bryant.
Maybe.
Well, you're assuming, though, at least right now, that he's going to return.
Maybe.
I know Paul has got these voodoo dolls and everything, but we won't necessarily get into
that. Hasn't played a full season in like 3 years,
right,
just saying.
At least their goal is they're going to have him on the field to start the season.
I get
so the
you.
Giants need to go.
I get you.
He'll be there. Dez Bryant, Ezekiel Elliott now, who they're probably going to look to have as an all-around
that
running
Witten
back.
That Witten guy's still around,
Witten
too.
Guy, exactly.
Is he ever going to retire?
Well, it
ever?
Seems like he goes and gets greater and greater as the age goes up.
And
there,
loves to play this team, I'll tell you that.
So he does. He's had some field days against that Giants defense. And then on top of that, the Philadelphia Eagles, who still have some options in the backfield. They've got a young receiving core, but they also have some very strong tight ends. Let's not forget about what they bring to the table. So, you know, that's why bringing it back to the Giants here, it's important to have three reliable options in the secondary that you can throw out there to match up with what a lot of the teams in the NFC East are going to throw at you, which is three wide receiver sets or maybe two wide receivers and at least a tight end.
I am very curious to see how the Giants' depth works out at secondary, because in my mind, not only do you need the three corners who are going to play probably 60 to 65% of the time, but who's your fourth corner? Because you don't know that all three of them are going to stay healthy for all 16 games. We have seen Giants corners go down like flies over the last 3 or 4 years. And so who else is going to be playing corner for these guys? You know, we've seen that Mykel Thompson has worked some slot stuff at the safety.
Yes.
We know that Bennett Jackson was originally a corner by trade. Might he be able to stay healthy and provide some depth at the corner position? To me, I'm real curious now this weekend at the rookie free agent and free agent undrafted camp. I'm real curious to see what kind of prospects the Giants might be able to uncover at corner, because there is a need for depth there. And remember, they've had guys like Witherspoon, Bruce Johnson, guys of that nature in the past. Charles James.
Tremaine McBride.
Okay, well, McBride was a veteran.
He's a veteran,
but I'm
also
talking about undrafted rookie free agents.
Okay. I was looking at maybe unknown commodities, too.
The Giants, over the last 6-7 years, they've had guys at that position that they've been able to find who have had sensational summer camps and made this team. You know, and then, of course, injuries sidetracked them, and that was the end of them. But the Giants seem to be very good at that position in particular, defensive back, finding these guys.
Well, that's why I think rookie minicamp is going to serve a great value to this team and this organization.
Because, I'll be watching.
Yes, oh, well, we know that about that. But the point you brought up before we get to the phone calls here, and we certainly appreciate you for holding tight on that perspective, but in terms of Mykel Thompson and Bennett Jackson, I would not overlook, like you said, their ability to move into the slot and provide some options there depending on what they want to do with Eli Apple. And remember, Darian Thompson now gives them the flexibility to maybe bring a safety or two back to the corner group.
Yes.
Because Thompson, nobody anticipated that they were really maybe even going to address that position, Paul, because there's so many guys returning from injury.
Correct.
Now you have Thompson in the mix, Landon Collins, and then some other young guys that are returning, like Nat Burhey and so forth. Mykel Thompson and Bennett Jackson could certainly be now used as options at corner versus being a safety.
And, of course, I'll be very interested to see what the Giants do moving forward at the offensive line spot, because I still think they need some help there. And, quite honestly, you could make an argument that they need some depth along the defensive front as well. And will that come from somebody that we see over the course of the next week or so? Or could it be somebody down the line? Again, a lot of questions still need to be answered. The Giants 53, not nearly complete.
Long time till we get there. Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've ever played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Just pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's open up the phone lines, 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow. Thanks for joining us for Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Emilio gets us started on Staten Island. Emilio, what's happening?
Hi.
Hey, what's up, fellas?
Good to talk to you.
Doing well.
Long time no speak. I don't understand staying pat at 10 and taking him. I think there's no doubt that we trade back. We got an extra pick and we can still get him.
Well, let me just say this to you. None of us were in the room, so we have no idea if the Giants made phone calls or if they took phone calls and then what those conversations were like. So I'm not going to sit here and criticize them back when I don't know what the efforts were on that behalf.
You have to have somebody, Emilio, keep in mind, that's willing to move up to that spot, too. I mean, it's a two-way street.
I think they definitely had calls because they went pretty deep on the clock. So that tells you they were definitely having some sort of conversation.
Either it tells you that or they couldn't get anybody to answer the phone. Again, you just don't know.
Or they were debating between a variety of options that they wanted.
I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to ask you what I asked Lance at the top of the show. If you could not trade out for whatever reason, and if Tunsil was off the board because as an organization you decided that the file was not clean, who are you taking?
Yeah, I don't know. That's rough because I was flipping about Tunsil myself.
Well, you saw me at MSG. Carr Banks and I both said we would take a shot at him, but the bottom line is the Giants felt the file made that impossible.
Well, like you said earlier in the show, we don't know what they know.
No, we don't. No, we do not. And the league and these teams have invested a lot of money in PIs and investigative services to uncover all of these things. And those files, by their very nature, stay private. We don't have access to them.
Well, and Emilio, the other thing I'll throw out, and I think Paul and I were discussing this perhaps off the air, but, you know, when a team has a track record of players who they have taken some chances on and have had some similar dealings like Tunsil showed on that video, you have to learn from those experiences. And Will Hill comes to mind, and even J'Ron Hosley, too. Let's not forget about him.
Yeah.
He was suspended. I'm not saying that that was the two players that they had in mind when they were thinking about whether or not to draft Tunsil, but I think it's easier if a team has had experience in that department, it's easier to maybe pass on a guy more so than a team that hasn't had to deal with that in the past. And the Giants have had to deal with that in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, between that and not coming out of this anywhere with some sort of offensive lineman, is extremely disheartening. I mean,
you know how I feel about offensive
line.
You know how I feel about the line, my friend. You don't have to preach to me.
Okay. In the past, I don't know if you remember.
Oh yeah.
I've had this conversation numerous times.
So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask you to kind of go with me here. I'm going to have patience because I know it's only the first week of May, and I have to believe that there is something else going on here, that they still have plans to address the offensive line. I have to believe that.
What I feel is obvious, I think they're in some pretty heated discussions with the Niners about Davis. I think that's what they got in their back pocket. Or what else could it be? I know they're high on the kid Hart from last year, from what I'm hearing.
They do like Bobby Hart. They do like him.
I heard, if I remember correctly, that possibly the right tackle for him.
I think he's better suited to right guard and to compete with John Jerry. I know David Deal feels the same way.
That's a name I don't want to hear anymore.
You know? So we're going to find out, but I will tell you this. It's my belief that the line as you see it now is not going to be the line you see in September.
I agree with you. It can't be. I mean, if it is, we're in for another long season.
Have a good day. Thank you.
We got all over the field. You can't protect Eli. This ain't going anywhere.
All right. Appreciate the phone call.
Appreciate the phone call. This was Jerry Reese at his press conference following them drafting Eli Apple. This is an exact quote about the possibility of moving down, Paul.
Okay.
Just so that we set the record straight.
Good.
He was asked about, was trading down ever a possibility? Quote, I don't know if it was ever a possibility. We got a call. We didn't like it. We stayed where we were. End quote.
I mean.
Now, here's another, just to follow up.
You don't even know how serious those talks were.
You know,
he's telling you there was a call.
He's telling you there was a call. They didn't like it, meaning they weren't blown away with whatever the offer was.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, then he was also asked, was there ever a possibility to trade up? Because people were also reacting to Tennessee moving in front, Chicago moving up to get Conklin and Floyd. His answer to that, quote, was there ever a possibility to trade up? There's always a possibility to trade up. If you want to pay the price to trade up, yeah, there's always a possibility to do that, end quote. Was the price too high was a follow-up question. Yeah, absolutely the price was too high, end quote. So that's Jerry Reese's answer regarding the ability to maybe move up or the ability to move down.
And I will give Emilio one other quote from Ben McAdoo. And again, we're quoting you here because it's better you know from them than from us.
No point to speculate.
Ben McAdoo asked about the offensive line the other night, said, quote, the right side of the offensive line, the story is yet to be written on the right side of the offensive line. We are just starting the 2016 offseason. He's telling you exactly what I told you. There's more to be had there. This is not a finished product.
And I think, as Emilio mentioned, as you and I have discussed in the past, you know, Bobby Hart, I think, is an option. I mean, he got valuable playing time last year. Where they see him, you know, guard, tackle. Remember, he was a tackle in college. It wasn't like he never played tackle.
Absolutely. And as far as the Giants are concerned, I think if he can show the ability to play a little of both, that's good.
Correct, because it gives you options. You can mix and match, and that's the whole point of what mini camp and training camp have to offer. It's to toy with the idea if you want to see what Bobby Hart can do at tackle. Mm-hmm. You want to see what he could do at guard versus experimenting week one or week two into the regular season. You don't want to be doing it then. That's why you do it during the course of the offseason. That's exactly why McAdoo said, story's still being written. We're still going to experiment
that's
the rest
it.
Of the way. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got B-Lo in New Orleans. B-Lo, what's happening?
What's going on, fellas?
Hi.
John, how you doing?
Paul and Lance.
Good
doing
to see
well,
you.
B-Lo. How's things with you?
All right. I wasn't too mad with the draft, you know. The only guy that I really didn't like too much is DJ Goodson, but the guy from the draft that you just had on, he kind of cleared it up a little bit. I guess I wasn't impressed because he had a highlight on YouTube where it was when he played I think it was Florida State. And he looked like he was confused, thrown off, and, you know, he wasn't in the right spot. You know, it just looked like he wasn't sure what he was doing. But other than that, Eli Apple, Shepard, oh, man, we in for a good season. We in for a good one.
Well, they certainly have options that I think could step in and assume roles, and that's what you want out of your draft. Sterling Shepard could come in day one. He could be a starting wide receiver. I don't really think that there's a big question mark right now.
Even if Victor Cruz is healthy, then Shepard's the number three, which means he will play a lot.
Well, they certainly line up three wide receivers more often than not, so I would agree with that. And I also think Darian Thompson, he could very well come in and be the starting safety.
Yes.
He's going to compete.
Collins.
He's going to compete.
That's certainly an option.
We know Apple's going to play a lot.
Apple there. So, I mean, those are three guys right there.
Top three.
And that's what you want. If your top three guys could come in, legitimately compete for a starting job, you know, I mean, that's certainly a good draft.
Yes, I agree. I would have to agree with that. And then you got to also think about you can only double one of the receivers. Either it's going to be Beckham, Cruz, or Shepard. either way it goes, Eli's going to have another big year this year coming. Let's go, Giants. Thank y'all for taking my call.
Appreciate it. B-Lo, appreciate the phone call. And let's not overlook the fact, I was just going to add, he mentioned the three wide receivers. You know, Shane Vereen or Paul Perkins or Rashad Jennings could catch the ball out of the backfield, too.
And one of the tight ends, whether it's Ty or Donnell. So it's third and seven. The Giants go three wide with those three receivers, Larry Donnell or Ty. Vereen's in the backfield. You could make a very strong argument that any one of those five guys could catch a first down pass.
Yeah. I know you were going to add something.
No, that's it.
Okay, that was what you were going to add.
That's
okay.
What I'm going to say.
There we go.
I think one of those five guys can catch a first down pass. So double as many of them as you want. Somebody there is going to get singled.
Well, and that's the whole point. You want to put stress on the opposing defense. And the way you do that is you put as many playmakers on the field at once. Jason's in New Jersey. Jason, what's happening?
I just want to talk about the offensive line. The way that I look at it, the starting right guard spot is set with John Jerry. You guys talk about a competition, but if you look at it, Bobby Hart was lining up as a second-team right tackle. He wasn't even the second-team right guard. And if you look at the Giants offseason, number one, they haven't pursued any starting guards in free agency. They didn't draft an interior lineman. When Ben McAdoo was asked at the owners' meetings about the right side of the offensive line, he said, quote, "We like John Jerry, ... We brought in Newhouse for depth." So he's clearly making the distinction that one is a starter.
Hold on. I'm going to let you finish in a second, but you do need to understand when Bobby Hart was here at training camp last year, he played both guard and tackle. They specifically wanted him to be able to play both spots because they weren't sure where he might either fit or where he might be needed. So understand that. So your first premise is actually inaccurate. Your second premise is, as far as not bringing in any guards, they brought in more tackles in free agency. They brought in a couple of veteran free agent journeyman tackles over the course of the last couple of months. If anything, that should tell you that they like Bobby Hart probably better at guard because they brought in extra tackles to participate over the summer. So you're right now your logic is real twisted, but you can go ahead and finish.
They brought in those tackles to beat out Newhouse. In terms of the starting right guard spot, to me, there is no competition. There never was one. I think it's media fabricated. I think in Ben McAdoo's eyes, Ben McAdoo is very, 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 very high on John Jerry. In his eyes, John Jerry is a starting right guard. Remember, he's in his contract year, and he is under contract, and he's making starter money for a guard. So,
how many Pro Bowls has John Jerry gone to? I mean, outside of a very few guys on this team, including Eli Manning, nobody is in cement. Honestly, come on. And here's what I will tell you. I've had conversation with Coach McAdoo about this roster and this starting lineup, and as he has said to me, competition at a lot of these positions is going to be hot and heavy. Trust me, John Jerry, because he's a veteran and because he's played a lot more games and is a decent pass protector, he's going to have the edge going in. But to just think that he is the right guard, absolutely 100, you're crazy.
I get it. Come week one, September 11th against Dallas at 4:25 p.m., on that football field, John Jerry will be the starting right guard.
And right now, today, the odds are a little bit in your favor, but that doesn't mean it's 100%.
It's 100%. There's no competition at right guard. John Jerry is the starting right guard.
I'll tell you what, I need you to go to the deli this afternoon and buy a winning lottery ticket since you obviously know 100%. Dave, let's go to the next call.
All right, well, appreciate the phone call, Jason. In fairness, though, I will say the last caller. Well, listen, we don't want you to get too angry here, Paul. You know, it's only day one after the draft.
Has John Jerry gone to 20 Pro Bowls?
No.
How can you say 100% he's locked in stone with no competition?
I don't think
anybody say that.
And I would agree with you. I don't think anybody is locked in on the right side of the offensive line. But in fairness, I will agree with the point that Jason alluded to. McAdoo, and I was trying to find the quote, when he spoke to the
favorable
media, he has been very high in talking
absolutely
and complimenting John Jerry's play based on what he saw last season. So there is very much validity to that statement.
And at the moment, John Jerry is the most accomplished right guard on the roster. No one is
by
arguing
far the most
that
experience. Yes.
But do not take that to the next level and say it's his job and there's no way he's going to compete or lose it,
no,
which is what the guy was saying.
I think that everybody needs to be certainly aware on the right side of the offensive line that somebody could come in and wow, and they're not necessarily solidifying their role. But I don't think it's a stretch to say, I would say John Jerry may be the front runner as it stands right now.
No argument there.
Right guard.
No argument there. But when a guy goes overboard, I got to tell him.
Well, that's why you had to rein him back in.
I had to.
You did.
in
your normal animated way.
There you go.
Let's head back to the phone lines. AJ is in South Carolina. AJ, what's happening?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I like what the Giants did in a draft. They had a good a draft class.
Well, what jumps out to you, AJ?
I know the Giants draft a running back, Paul Perkins. Why did this size of the draft a running back? I didn't expect that.
Well, I think it was a surprise, too, based on what the roster looked like, but it goes back to value, and that's what the Giants front office said. He was too good of a value to pass up at that point, and they feel another guy in the mix is only going to shake up the competition at this point.
Because I know at UCLA, they went a spread offense, and he got converted to a post-style offense in the NFL.
He's got some really good quicks.
Yeah.
He's a very exciting player when he gets the ball in his hands. And I think, you know, if you listen to Jerry Reese talk about basketball on grass, you can't have enough quicks.
Well, and plus, the point you were alluding to, AJ, remember, he played under Jim Mora Jr. Remember, that's the head coach of UCLA.
Right.
So he's coming from an NFL-style system, which I think also makes him attractive. When you're learning from a coach that's been in the NFL, makes the transition a little bit easier to at least understand the jargon and the language more so than maybe what he brings to the table.
And quite frankly, what I said about John Jerry holds true probably for every one of those running backs except for Shane Vereen and Rashad Jennings. All those other guys are going to be in competition. Nobody walks into this building with their feet cemented on the roster, you know, outside of a handful of guys. And we know who they are. See, you know, Eli Manning, Olivier Vernon, you know, there's a few of them.
See, Paul has experience giving out pink slips. So that's why he likes to make sure that everybody knows they should put on their dancing shoes and tap, because nobody is safe.
You're not coming off a Super Bowl championship season, are you? So more guys than not have to understand you need to earn your spots this summer.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks
AJ,
for the call.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. 201-939-4513, that is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We'll also get to your tweets. I know a lot of people are bringing some questions to the plate on social media. But in the meantime, let's head back to the phones. We got Shakes in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening? Shakes, are you
there? What's going
on? Hey, it's been a long time.
Yeah, what's going on, P-Dot?
Hey, how are you?
Man, look, I ain't even going to get into nothing but the draft right now. So I'm going to say this about the draft.
Yeah.
I'm very happy about it. I think we feel every hole besides offensive linemen in this offseason. Now, it may take time for us to gel and everybody to gel and these rookies to get more experience and learn, you know, technique and things like that, but as far as our future is very bright. Now, I wanted to defend Eli Apple because people are saying, oh, it was a debacle or it was a breach. And to me, I'm like, what are y'all saying? Now, me, when I looked at film, I had him my second-rated corner, my second-rated after Vernon Hargraves. And I can understand why they went Apple over Hargraves. If you think about the future, and you don't want a Jenkins and a Hargraves, 5'10", 5'11" guys
exactly.
covering corners out there.
Yeah,
so
you're right.
You got a guy that's 6'1", 6'2" with long arms, man, that could be a shutdown corner. I love this Eli Apple pick. I really do. And then when you think about the defensive backs that's going to be back there this year with Thompson, if he can take over the starting job, that's a nasty defensive back core. I don't understand why people are thinking it's a reach. Some people were saying that Miami Dolphins was going to take him at 13 if Tunsil wasn't there. So I don't understand that. Now, another thing I wanted to say was a lot of the reason why I love this draft, not only did they give me a linebacker, which I've been complaining about for years now, but I've also been complaining about not valuing tight ends and a blocking tight end. Have offensive lineman, half receiver. And that's what Adams is. He was the fastest tight end in the combine. The fastest. The dude is a beast, man. So I think he's going to surprise people. The linebacker, I think that the Clemson defense has been good for like three straight seasons, tops in college. Last year, he led them in tackles, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Led them in tackles. That defense. So people, for the people who's questioning it, don't question this. this boy is nice. Go look at the film. He sheds off blocks like he just brushes them off like, get off of me. Come on, man. Y'all got to like this linebacker. And then and I'm sorry, I'm keeping on going. But
no, go, Shakes, go.
The one thing that I was really complaining about and I was getting a lot of flack for in this offseason was I was saying we need a workhorse running back. We need a workhorse. We need somebody that can carry the rock 10 to 15 times and then get spelled off with a ring. Now, Jennings did his work, but this kid Perkins, oh, my gosh. He got moves. Look at his YouTube.
Oh, he's got quicks.
He's got quicks.
Oh, he really does.
And he's a good receiver, too.
Oh, my gosh. Some people comparing him to Tiki Barber, and I can see why.
Shakes. Hold on. You go back a ways now, and I know you can follow me here. I think he runs the ball more like David Meggett.
That's
not so bad, because Meggett could be pretty darn dangerous with the rock.
And you know what? When Tiki Barber came in the league, that's who I thought about was Meggett. So it's in the same vicinity, and this guy puts in effort in blocking and picking up those blitz, too.
No. That, Shakes, that's where I got to stop you just a little bit
because that's
one of the things coming out that the personnel people are talking about that he's going to need improvement on. And, of course, stay on the field in the pros, you're really going to have to work on that because these guys are big and strong and they're fast. You know what I mean?
Listen to me. You've been doing this for 50 years, right?
Yeah, go ahead. Not quite 50, but enough.
You don't listen to anybody else. You look
at
the film yourself.
You know, come on, you know now.
You look at the film yourself, you see that the boy puts in his body and he puts in his effort in that blocking.
What I see is, Shakes, here's what I'll see.
He needs to learn more.
Shakes, here's what I see. You're right. He's not afraid to do it. He's willing to do it, and that's a big part of it.
There you go.
But the question is, can he do it at this level? It's not the same.
Well, one thing you can't do is teach a guy to sit there and have the kahunas to sit there and
absolutely
take on the
linebacker. Well, it's the combination of that, and I agree with you, Shakes, but it's the combination of that and the technique. So I think what Paul's bringing to the table, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he's got the desire, but like any other young back,
he's willing to
refine the technique.
He's willing to do it. Yeah, and he's going to have to be a little stronger, too.
You want a guy that's willing to do it.
Absolutely.
And I believe he would do it. Same with the Bradshaw thing. He was willing to do it, but he wasn't a great blocker out of college. But he groomed into that.
I'll give you a great example, Shakes. The antithesis of this, David Wilson wanted to touch the football, and he really was not very anxious or enthusiastic about ever picking up any kind of blocking skills. Mm. And I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
I know.
So we're not talking about David Wilson here.
No, not at all. Not at all.
All right, so we're on the same page. We're good.
And, I just wanted to speak on this tight end, and then I wanted to ask a question that I'll take off of air.
Sure.
But this tight end can block. Can block, man.
Yep. You're right.
When you got a dual threat, this is what I've been asking for years, man. Put an emphasis on a tight end that can actually block.
You know what, though, Shakes? Shakes, they got Will Johnson from the Steelers, who plays fullback, H-back, and inline tight end. And if you know anything about him, he blocks. He does.
But he's not a receiver like Adams.
No. He's more of a blocker. But I think he will help. And there's a reason they gave him some money from Pittsburgh now to come over here and help out.
Because, Shakes, when you got third and one and you just want to put your strongest front group in.
Johnson could help.
Johnson could be certainly one of the candidates to be out there.
I'm not doubting it. I think that he'll be the fullback, the starting fullback. I think he would take the other guy's job.
Nikita Whitlock? Well, there's going to be a battle in training camp.
Yeah.
Let him fight.
What was the other question you had, Shakes? Because I want to get through a few more calls.
And I'm going to take off air, and thank y'all for taking my call. How do y'all feel? And I know y'all can't, say – I know this for sure, that y'all don't know anything about this. But I want to know y'all opinion on it and y'all assumption is how do y'all feel about either trading for Anthony Davis from the 49ers or giving a guy like Slauson from the Bears a shot that just got released?
Slauson, just cut.
All right, Shakes, one of your best calls, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. Slauson is a free agent put out on the street yesterday by the Bears. He is a quality pass protector at left guard. Now, the Giants have Justin Pugh there. Do you want to bring in a guy like Slauson and move Pugh back over to the other side, I don't know that you really want to do that. Is Lawson a guy
to the opposite side too?
Is Lawson a guy capable of moving over to the right? I haven't done enough of background on him to know how much right side he's played. Excuse me, with Chicago. Those are the questions you have to answer. Then you also have to answer, he's not a tackle, he's a guard. Are you happy with the competition between Hart and Jerry at guard? Do you think Slauson is that much better than those two guys? Otherwise, you're wasting your time and your money.
Though, you got a roster that could get up to 90. So, you know, I don't necessarily be a waste, you know, the more you have.
He's not going to come in for 5 cents.
Of course. No, I'm sure he's going to field offers. And if a team says, hey, we want you to start at left guard, that may be more attractive.
That's the deal with Slauson. Anthony Davis right now is retired. Now, quite frankly, his body of work is good. He is a quality right tackle who has proven he can play at this league at a high level, and he's 26 years old. To me, he would be somebody on the radar, without question. In fact, I've tweeted that out before.
Well, it depends.
But
also
that's simply, I think any team in the league would be interested in finding out what Anthony Davis's plans are.
Correct. And it depends also what the Niners would want in return for him. I think that you have to take
Well, they are entitled to compensation
because he is their property. Correct. They have their rights. And remember, you know, you also need to read between the lines in terms of the media speculation that there may be some bad blood between the player and the front office. We don't know how much validity there is behind that. The other thing is, keep in mind, has it played football
for
in a year? While you're right, age is good, upside's good. Fact that he hasn't played football, you know, you wonder, is he going to get back to form from where he was before retirement? That's something I think you need to evaluate.
Resume is good, though.
The resume is great. Listen, 26 years old, I think most people would sign up for that, and you don't have as many bumps and bruises on the body with a year off from football. There's certainly a positive to that, but you want to make sure that there's a smooth transition back into the mix from where you left off. It looks like Slauson played a little bit of center, from what I glanced at, too, during the course of his career. But
again,
I don't see
a position
much in
the
terms
Giants
of the right
feel
guard.
Pretty good about, given Weston Richburg's portfolio to this point.
Absolutely. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. We got Scott in Virginia. Scott, what's happening?
Well, my primary question is this. I'd also like to comment on the draft. The Cowboys, this kid, Jalon Smith, he's already said he thinks he can play this year. Is there anybody in the league looking into any collusion that might have gone on between the doctor and the Cowboys, that they put out one report when there's another truth to the situation? If this kid plays this year, it seems to me like there was collusion.
All we could say is we've heard hearsay, but I know Rick Seratella from the NFL Draft Bible just said to us earlier in the program, and I don't know if you were tuned in, that it was his understanding half of the teams in the league aren't even sure if he's going to play again, period.
Yeah, I think there's still opinions that are all across the board, Scott. And remember, they had an opportunity to look at the medicals every team. It wasn't as if Dallas was the only team that had an opportunity.
And he went back for a recheck.
Correct, exactly. So every team had an opportunity to review his medicals. And I'll use a parallel, Scott. In baseball, we hear there's a team doctor from the Mets that may do surgery on a Yankees pitcher. That happens left and right. I don't think that's anything new or unique when it comes to the NFL.
Okay. The question is, were the medical reports accurate? But it's a lingering question. My take on the draft is this. I would have preferred Shaq Lawson over Eli Apple. And I like the draft. I'm just disappointed they didn't get a defensive end. JPP is still a question mark, and that's my one downside of the draft. Maybe next week you guys could address. You alluded to this earlier, Paul. I'm pretty confident the Giants are going to come back and sign some players. They've got money left.
Yes.
You got the June 1 cuts.
Yep.
You got a team like the Dolphins who got Tunsil. They've got two quality tackles. Maybe we're going to make a trade. So I would be curious if at some point you guys could survey the league. I know there's at least a handful of teams that are in very bad cap position. You know, is there some? I would think there's a player or two coming. Maybe you guys can highlight that sometime next week.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you. As a
part of the evidence as to what he is saying, look what happened the last couple of days. Seafreeze, the punter from the Chargers, a quality punter, was just let go. Antrell Roll was just let go by the Bears. Slauson was just let go by the Bears. Guys are starting to drop now, and he's right. There's a June 1st deadline for a bunch of cuts to also be coming. That free agent pool, and we've been telling you this for about, 3 or 4 months, is not in stone. That list is constantly evolving.
Because teams are now going to restructure their rosters as a result of the players they brought in via the draft. However, one thing I did want to mention that Scott brought up, he was talking about the Dolphins. They have a number of tackles, and they do. But there's chatter that Tunsil could very well start out at a guard, which means that they're still going to keep their two tackles
sure,
in those spots.
They can do that.
They have a veteran in Brandon Albert. They brought in a guy in last year's draft. So I wouldn't necessarily say that drafting Tunzel triggers them saying, oh, we got too many tackles on this roster, so now we're going to part ways with them.
Who is anxious to get rid of a tackle?
Of course.
But it can happen.
It can happen, but Tunzel and one of their other tackles are still under rookie contracts, which makes it
right.
manageable. Brandon
sure.
Albert's really the only guy that is under a lucrative deal that maybe you would consider parting ways with.
That's why the Clady deal out of Denver was very interesting, and I thought the Jets made a very good move to acquire him from the Broncos. One thing about Shaq Lawson, because you guys know he would have been in my conversation and has been for several months on this program. What we found out, and again, this is that whole medical thing that comes into play. I guess it was 48 hours before the draft. I remember there was much made that Shaq Lawson has a rotator cuff problem, and he played
yeah.
through it last year at Clemson, which of course shows his toughness. Give him a star for that. But apparently that rotator cuff, you know, again, you're going up against stronger guys in the National Football League, so there's more stress and strain put on it. And if I understood, I guess Pat Kerwin, I think of Sirius, was even talking about the fact that he's probably going to wind up needing a procedure.
It's possible.
And if not, maybe during the season, if it doesn't affect him, certainly after the season, he probably will have to have one, even if he can fight through it and play through it. But fighting through it and playing through it at a high level of NCAA football is a lot different than going up against the power of those NFL guys every Sunday. So to me, that's probably why Shaq Lawson started to fall some spots. And I can't blame a team for feeling that way.
Well, and I think Miles Jack, too, there's questions, marks, about whether or not he may need additional surgery, too. I don't think he's necessarily out of the
clear
as
well.
Oh,
when that microfracture word came flying out of
Correct.
The sky, it really got people nervous.
So there's a number of teams that, you know, are willing to take those chances. Plus, you know, you also need to look at this. Rex Ryan's son played at Clemson. So he
no
has
doubt.
A little bit more intel on Shaq Lawson. That doesn't mean that they know more about his medicals, but you hear from your son, you know the program, maybe you're willing to take that chance. Just like I threw out Jimmy Sexton, the agent for Laramie Tunzel, also represents Mike Tannenbaum as well as Adam Gase, the head coach. So when you connect the dots, you say to yourself, well, maybe it's understandable why this team took those risks and took those chances.
Everybody has their own reasons for doing
yes.
what they do, and unless you peel back all the layers of the onion, sometimes you just don't find them.
Want to close out the show with a few tweets here before we wrap up.
Sure.
I know there's a number of you that can't get to a phone, and we certainly appreciate you chiming in. Ben Gruen at Gruen. Ben, there's a very real chance Apple will have a bigger effect on the team than Shepard, and it won't show up in the stats. Three cornerbacks is huge. That is certainly something that we had discussed. No doubt about that. In this day and age, with a pass-happy league, you need to have three corners out there. At Jose underscore M underscore Negron. Hey, Paul and Lance, is it likely we keep four running backs on the roster with them bringing in Perkins?
I would think they're going to try to keep four because of the injury factor. And, I mean, again, still, as much as Rashad Jennings is a great guy and a workout warrior, he still hasn't given anybody 16 games in one season yet. You know, there is a durability question with him still. And so I don't think it's out of the question they keep four.
Now, in that four, that's not including a fullback, though, I'm
Correct.
Assuming, in your count. Okay.
Correct.
Because I know some people, they include the fullback in that count. So a fullback plus four, so five backs, you're at least anticipating.
I think right now I would say I would lean toward it.
I would think with the number of players they have in the mix and Bobby Rainey, what he could bring to special teams, there may be value in keeping the fourth running back, who I think gives you special teams more so than maybe anything else they could bring to the table, because I think there's value in that. So I would watch out for who's the best special teams guy. Dark was a special teams guy
yeah.
in terms of his coverage, and Rainey in terms of his return. Those two guys could be battling it out potentially.
And you know what's interesting there? Those guys can be special teams assets. While Andre Williams is not much of a help on that part of the equation, he really is probably the best inside between the tackles runner of those guys. And he's proven to be that type of bowling ball kind of runner. At least he showed it a billion times over at BC. And as a rookie with the Giants, he showed it in the last part of that season. So it's a different dynamic. They do bring different skill sets to the table. And it may come down to not just a numbers game, but it's like, okay, what skill set do we think we need more?
Absolutely, the versatility angle. One last comment here, and this is related to the running game slash pass protection. RJ at RJ Bout brings up, Eli was only sacked 27 times last year. It's not like he was on his back all year. And I would agree, RJ. I think pass protection, if you look at the numbers, has improved, but it's the run blocking. That's where you still want to strengthen it. So you have to balance both. You say to yourself, okay, yes, Eli Manning wasn't on his back. The sacks have dipped over the last 2 years. But you look at the running game, it really didn't come alive until late in the season.
I'm going to make it real simple for you. The pass protection is not the reason that the Giants' four-minute offense struggled. It's that simple.
Well said. All right, we'll certainly continue the dialogue throughout the course of the week. We'll have plenty of draft reaction. We'll continue to hear from some of the draft experts, get their grades, their feedback on who the Giants selected. Paul and I will be back tomorrow, and we will continue the conversation all week long here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you tomorrow. Have a good one.